This episode of the Inner Ho Uprising is sponsored by BetterHelp.
This episode of the Inner Ho Uprising is also available for your viewing pleasures on YouTube. If looking at people while they podcast is your thing, then you can check the link in the show notes and gaze along as we talk our shiznits. Very good shiznit this week, and we all match. Inner Ho Uprising. Welcome to the Inner Ho Uprising, the podcast about sex, love, and dating from the perspective of me, Sam, one black, non-monogamous, pansexual feminist ho who lives in New York City and whose pronouns are she and her.
And me, Rodeca, a fat, black, non-monogamous, existentialist femme whose life is a series of coincidences that somehow landed her here, and my pronouns are she and her.
And Akua, pronoun she and her, who is just a tired hoe this week, but also a demisexual and monogamous and all the good things.
Yes. Yes, multiple things you can be at once. Every episode of the Inner Ho Uprising works like this. Myself and my lovely rotating co-hosts talk about sex, love, and dating as it pertains to current events in the world, our lives, and yours. And occasionally we hit you with interviews from insightful folks or do deep dive episodes on a topic of our choice. This episode, we're doing a deep dive. I'm about to dive in.
Whoa.
Thank you for the backing track. Oh, I don't know, man. I don't know. I'm not Trey Songz. We're talking all about reproductive rights today. Specifically, we're getting into this conversation through the lens of one's right to have access to the healthiest birth outcome possible, or one's lack of right to have access to the healthiest birth outcome possible. That's really what we're getting into. So we're talking about the history of eugenics and sterilization abuse in this country, climate change, environmental racism, and birthing mortality rates, the myth of overpopulation, and so much more. This episode, a subject matter, is pretty sensitive, and if you don't want these kinds of topics on your spirit at the moment, feel free to go on and skip this episode. That is okay, baby. You can come back at a later date. That later date being next week. But then a content note, because after this episode, we'll be doing one more episode of a more fun subject matter. And then the hoes will be taking a nap until 2021. But we will still be quite active on our Patreon community. So you can fuck with our community chat, hangouts, movie nights, etc. by going to patreon.com/innerhoeuprising. I'm considering doing Twitch streaming content because why not? Just have some fun.
What?
But yeah, in terms of episodes, one more and then we'll see you next year.
If you would like to follow along with the conversation had in this podcast on social media, you can do so by using the hashtag InnerHoeUprising so we can see it, and the hashtag PodIn so other people can see it.
And if you would like to follow us on social media, you can do so at InnerHoeUprising without the G on Twitter, at InnerHoeUprising on Instagram and Facebook. You can join our Facebook group by searching Inner Ho Uprising Community. That is CUMMUNITY. You can also head over to innerhouprising.com to pay a hoe.
Yes, if you want to pay us to speak virtually at your school or conference about sex positivity, black feminism, podcasting, or other kinds of topics that we discuss on this here show, or if you'd like us to host a consent, pleasure, or dating virtual workshop for your organization, just know that we would love to do so. So to book us, you can send us a line to ihupodcast@jiggitygmail.com. It's actually just gmail.com. Please don't write jiggitygmail. The email will be in the show notes. Okay.
Someone's going to be like, it bounced back. What happened?
I didn't know Jiggity Gmail was a domain. I shine bright in all my different colors, all my different colors, colors. We shine bright in all our different colors, all our different colors. All right, we're getting into things early this week because we got a lot to talk about. So this is our segment called Fuck It. It is our topic of the day. And today we're doing a deep dive on reproductive rights. So there were a couple of ideas in our heads that have been circulating for a couple of weeks now, and we decided it's time to just get it all out by way of a deep dive. So some specific points that we'll be touching on today will be eugenics and forced sterilization, climate change, environmental racism, air pollution, and healthy births among marginalized folks, and the myth of global scarcity. And just to note, because we are American-ass motherfuckers, we will be looking at this through the context context of Americans. And of course, through our queer Black feminist lens that we look at everything through. So let's talk about the fun topic of eugenics. Unfortunately, that is where the story begins. So eugenics is a set of beliefs and practices that aim to improve the genetic quality of human population, historically by excluding people and groups judged to be inferior or promoting those judged to be superior. Just gotta light some fucking sage because reading that made me feel icky. In concept, this has actually been around since 400 BC with Plato introducing the idea of selective breeding to humans because white men have always been weird, apparently.
Of course.
And in name, the term was coined by Francis Galton, a English eugenicist, math and science person. I don't want to list all the things that he said that he did because if you create a eugenics, you're not that smart in my book, buddy. And then fun fact, he was a cousin of Darwin. So there's that.
That's interesting, and it feels relevant. So that's interesting.
Yeah, he was inspired by one of his cousin's books.
Hmm.
Yeah. I could go into a rabbit hole, but we have a lot to talk about, so I'm just going to move on. But you can research that yourself, hey. So let's talk about scientific racism now, because eugenics is largely tied to scientific racism. So scientific racism, if you don't know, despite its nomenclature or naming structure, is the pseudo-scientific belief that empirical evidence exists to support or justify racism, racial discrimination, racial inferiority, or racial superiority. So at the height of the Enlightenment era in Europe, and as colonization of the world began by niggas from Europe, that began a lot of white men going across the world, and they just started saying and writing down a lot of really weird things after interacting with different populations of people who were not European. So there are like a lot of really weird things that have been said. I don't want to get into that because I'm pretty sure you know what type of lane I'm going down, but I'm going to say one of the weird things because I don't think it's that problematic. Well, it is problematic, but I don't think it's that painful to hear, but I think it's just silly and ridiculous, and I want to say the ridiculous things that these people who thought that they were scientists were saying. So in his book Philosophical Accounts of the Works of Nature, published in 1721, Richard Bradley claimed it's just so silly there to be five sorts of men based on their skin color and other physical features. So there were white Europeans with beards, white men in America without beards.
That is extremely specific. Okay, got you.
Men with copper color skin, small eyes, and straight black hair, and blacks, which have straight black hair, and then also the blacks with curly hair. And that was the five races.
Whoa.
That's how you know this shit was never science. This nigga said white men with beards and white men without beards.
Black people with straight hair.
White men in America without beards.
So, just to let you know, if you have a perm or a sew-in right now, you are currently a different race.
That's it.
Rebecca, you're a different race from us with that wig on.
That's straight up. Straight up. So I don't know y'all.
I'll never be like one of you Negroes.
I'll never be like one of y'all. I just imagine the wind passing by and just like straight up being exposed, and I'm like,
oh, I guess I'm back here.
Yeah, I guess I'm back.
Yeah, so eugenics and scientific racism was bullshit. But unfortunately, most of it deemed white people to be superior and all of the other races to be inferior, with black people typically being on the lowest rung of inferiority. This served as a justification for, you guessed it, slavery. Oh yeah, we can enslave people because they're not humans. So the concept of race has since been debunked. There hasn't been enough, just to explain what that means, there hasn't been enough evolution that has occurred between populations in silo for us to ever have developed to be like separate subspecies, nonetheless separate races. But the pseudoscientific idea around race prevailed and continued to do so. So let's talk a little bit about eugenics in the United States. So that was largely inspired by Francis Galton, cousin of Darwin. The height of it occurred in the 1880s to 1920s, but had and has continued. There's a peer-reviewed journal right now that publishes work in the eugenic space, which is very weird, but that does exist. And it was supported by tactics like anti-miscegenation laws, which means no people of different races, quote unquote, getting married, forced sterilization, and immigration restriction. So some familiar names who were associated with eugenics that you might know, good old Alexander Graham Bell. This nigga gave us the phone, AT&T, and a slice of eugenics on the side. He was a part of something called the American Breeders Association.
Oh.
Doesn't that sound fun?
What the fuck?
Yeah, everything was really weird back in the day. I mean, it's really weird now, but like, it was so weird then that you have to just be like, oh, of course it's weird now. Mm-hmm. Like, white people have always been really strange, guys.
And like, openly just terribly weird. That's what it is. That's what it is. It's just like in the title. That's why it's like brazen. And you're like, whoa, what the fuck? But it's always been like that. It's just less obvious now.
I mean, it's cold. Something about the beards, I think.
Yeah, something about them beards change niggas up, man.
There's also, unfortunately, Margaret Sanger. I'm sure you've heard that name. She was the leader of the American birth control movement and founder of Planned Parenthood. I say that not to say that access to birth control is inherently eugenic or that the modern day Planned Parenthood aligns with her ideals, but that is to say it is particularly grating when white women's reproductive rights politics stops at pink pussy hats and a right to an abortion and doesn't address the ways in which black birthing people have and are currently locked out of access to healthy birthing options, period. Termination or not of pregnancy. And Akua will get into some of that later. Some of the people who have been targeted by eugenic and forced sterilization in this country have been black people, native folks, Latinx people, specifically Chicanas and Puerto Ricans, migrants, that is like Jewish and Asian folks, incarcerated populations, and disabled folks, particularly those with mental disability. A bunch of sterilization legislation passed across the country, specifically allowing the sterilization of folks with mental disability. One notable case was the 1927 Supreme Court case Buck versus Bell, which allowed for the compulsory sterilization of patients who were within mental institutions. So a lot of words like, okay, so this is not in use anymore, feeble-minded, but that was used to subjugate people in categories like, oh, this person has a lower IQ or whatever, and used to justify their forced sterilization. But also words like idiot were used to do that exact same thing, which is why on this show we've taken the stance to not say words like that, because they are rooted in this horrible ass ableism. All ableism is horrible. So some of the things that they did before I get into birth control and sterilization were these like family shaping tactics, just to like open your mind up about what sterilization and eugenics meant and like how these things still exist today. So IQ tests were actually used to deem people to be quote unquote fit versus unfit for quote unquote breeding. I do not know why white men with beards wanted us to be animals so much, but that was a thing. And just to remind you all, the meaning of intelligence is not agreed upon. There's no one intelligence arbiter that is like, this means you're smart and this means that you are not smart. The validity of IQ tests has been largely disputed and often referred to as biased to be in favor of white men with beards. They need to put that on the censor box. Even if you're a white woman, I identify as a white man with a beard. And then last reminder, race is not genetic, as I said a couple of moments ago. So there can be no link between race, genes, and intelligence, because there's no link between race and genes. They used to do things called better baby and fitter family contest. And I'm not going to get into what that is, because what's the point? But like, why did that exist? Better baby? Okay. Now let's get into the main event of fucked upness, birth control and sterilization. Not birth control being fucked up, but when it is compulsory, it is fucked up. So that was actually used to deny white women, quote unquote, deemed fit to breed and imposed on everyone else. So it's like white women need to carry the good stock. Oh, God, this is so horrible to say. And everybody else was cut out from reproducing. Yeah. So let's take a little moment to deep dive into birth control and sterilization of yesteryear. And by yesteryear, I literally mean 4 to 5 decades ago, and then also now, kind of. So that's fun. In the 1950s and 60s saw a surge of forced and coerced sterilization in black folks. In the 1970s saw a similar surge amongst Chicanx folks, like folks who are descendant of Mexican ancestry, and native folks. So here's a couple of statistics. Among some populations, like black folks and Latinx folks, national statistics don't even exist. So these are just like zoned in regional statistics, because that was a thing that white men with beards didn't feel the need to track. An estimated 40% of Native American women, that's between 60,000 and 70,000 women, and 10% of Native American men in the United States underwent sterilization in the 1970s. And that is really not just because they wanted to. Like, that was not because they were just like, oh yeah, let's get sterilized, but I'll get into more of that later. In California, by the year 1964, a total of 20,108 people were sterilized, and they were disproportionately Mexican and of Mexican descent. In North Carolina, I'll talk about this specific instance a little bit later as well, of the 7,600 women who were sterilized by the state between the years of 1933 and 1973, about 5,000 were African American, and that is not proportionate to the population of African Americans in North Carolina. So here are some examples of how this all plays out. So I grouped them into different categories because there's different categories of violating people's basic human rights. So we got the straight up non-consent and deceit, the uninformed consent, which I'll explain what that means later, and the coercive versions of this happening. So there's something that people refer to as Mississippi appendectomies. And that is basically where a Southern Black woman would go to a hospital to give birth or something else and would come home with a non-consented hysterectomy that would happen at the hands of Southern medical students. Essentially, those medical students were just practicing how to do hysterectomies on people and not telling them what was happening. Another instance of this you can learn about in the documentary No Mas Bebes, which is a doc all about Latinx women in California who were sterilized after childbirth in 1970s. Very similar situation to the one I just said about the Mississippi appendectomies. Then there is uninformed consent. So just to let you know about what informed consent means, that is when permission is granted in the knowledge of the possible consequences, typically that which is given by a patient to a doctor for treatment with full knowledge of the possible risks and benefits. Full knowledge, you fully understand what's going on. Everyone knows that you understand what's going on. It's written, it's said, it's signed, depending on how you communicate, in a language that you speak, and all of those kinds of things. So some examples of uninformed consent. In 1974, there was the story of two Black teenagers, Minnie Lee and Mary Alice Reef, that came to light. Their mother couldn't read and involuntarily signed them up to be sterilized, believing that she was actually consenting to have them put on birth control. There's this 1970s story where the Indian Health Services and contract physicians recommended sterilization to Native American women as the appropriate form of birth control, failing to present potential alternatives and to explain the irreversible nature of sterilization. There were also language barriers hindering them from fully giving informed consent, because if you don't know what the fuck the person is saying, can't agree to it. Then there's some stories of coercion. In 1972, the U.S. Senate, a U.S. Senate hearing testimony heard the story of 2,000 Black women in the South who were threatened to have their welfare revoked if they didn't consent to sterilization. There is a story that happened in North Carolina from 1929 to 1974. Basically, North Carolina had a eugenics program that sterilized close to 7,600 men and women. Like I said earlier, 5,000 of those people were African American. So essentially, our friends over at Tea with Queen and Jay did a really good deep dive into this story like 10 episodes ago in their episode Whack Ass Patriarchy. I'm going to put that in the show notes. But it was in the news recently because legislation was passed to pay back some but not all of the victims of that. But that was another instance of coercion. In Puerto Rico, between the span of 1930s and 1970s, nearly one third of the female population in Puerto Rico was sterilized. At the time, this was the highest rate of sterilization in the world. Once again, that didn't happen by accident. That was a very targeted thing that was occurring. There's a documentary about this called La Operación. And women were essentially coerced or not fully consented and confused about what was even happening. Another story, not sterilization, but tangentially related, scientists were doing clinical trials for oral contraceptive in Puerto Rico, and they were using Puerto Rican birthing people as basically like test subjects, but they didn't give them informed consent. So they were saying like, oh, this is something that basically is birth control, like will allow you to not have kids while you're on it and you can have sex and all that kind of stuff. But they didn't tell them that they were using this as a trial for a drug that was eventually going to be used in the United States. And they also were not telling them that the levels of like hormones in those were way higher than the birth control that we use today. So basically they were like test subjects and they didn't let them know. Also in the 1970s, Indian health services and contract physicians threatened that the refusal of sterilization would result in women losing their children and or federal benefits, kind of like that welfare thing that I talked about and pertains to in relation to Black women earlier. So there's just been a long history of these kinds of things happening. And I think it's important to note that this sordid history kicked off a lot of reproductive rights movements led by Black women, Chicano women, and Native folks at the time, because they were just like, okay, something's going wrong. Something ain't right about this. So we're going to like push this forward so that you stop doing this in our communities, because it's not right. And then to leave, well, not to leave you, but before I get into present day, since we're still in yesteryear, everyone's favorite not so fun fact, Nazi Germany was inspired by the United States sterilization legislation. So that tells you all you need to know about this here country we live in today, boy. Let's talk a little bit about today before we kick it off to Akua to talk about a different perspective of today. But recently in the news, ICE was in the news. ICE is always in the news, but ICE was in the news in September 2020 after a whistleblower nurse by the name of Dawn Wooten, a Black woman, came forward alleging that unnecessary hysterectomies were being performed on immigrants in custody at Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE, Irwin County Detention Center in Georgia. A doctor by the name of Mahendra Amin was ID'd as the doctor behind these unnecessary hysterectomies. A couple of women came forward to Dawn Wooten and called him specifically the uterus collector. Wooten said that detained immigrant women she cared for told her a gynecologist subjected them to hysterectomies and other sterilization procedures without their knowledge or consent. I believe at this point a dozen women have come forward with allegations about this specific doctor, or at least that specific detention center. To give you an example of one of the stories, one woman came forward. She was told that she had a cyst on her ovary and that she needs to come in for a procedure. Amin performed the procedure, but he performed it on the wrong ovary. So he removed the ovary that didn't have the cyst, and then they told her that she needed to come back, and then he removed the other ovary, thus leaving her infertile. And it's like, I don't know how this happens this many times where this many women are saying this happened to me, but whether it's intentional and you have some fucking weird shit going on where you don't want to see migrant women reproduce, or you're just incompetent, the reason why this is happening to this population of women is because they are incarcerated and marginalized, whether it's like on purpose or not on purpose. There needs to be some intentionality behind it. And that's not the case. There's no intentionality behind protecting these women in this detention center. And I would not be surprised, because of how people in general are treated in incarceration in general, but specifically in detention centers as it pertains to migrant people, if this was happening to other folks, you know? So, also in more modern day, let's talk about the California prison system. So there's a new documentary called Belly of the Beast that focuses on modern day coercive sterilization occurring in California prisons. The director, Erica Cohn, who has been working on this for a very long time, I forgot to write down the date, but it's been decades since she's been following the story, I believe, has calculated that nearly 1,400 sterilizations took place between 1997 and 2013. That is like now. Like, you niggas were born in 1997. That is right now at this very moment. One instance of this occurring was a woman who had a cyst that may or may not have been cancerous. Her doctor asked her if she wanted to have more kids. She said that, I'm not sure. The doctor asked her if she wanted to have a hysterectomy. She said, I want a hysterectomy only if the cyst is cancerous. The cyst was not cancerous, but the doctor removed her uterus anyway. Yeah, I haven't watched this documentary yet, but one thing that I will say from what I gathered is doctors working amongst that population of people having these views of not like, oh, I hate Black people and I hate incarcerated people, so I'm going to remove their right to have a baby, like when it was in the 1920s, but more so having these paternalistic ideas in the sense of, it's just not best for you to have a child, or you're not the appropriate population to have a child, or because you're in prison, you know, it wouldn't be best for you to get pregnant because the chances are you might go back to prison again. Totally not addressing like the fact that there are systems in place that pretty much encourage recidivism as opposed to reformation or folks entering life outside of being in the prison system in a fair and accessible way. But yeah, so like that notion of paternalism is something that I want us to start thinking about. So Rebecca and Akua are going to get into the implications of that kind of stuff. But I think it's pertinent to stay abreast of things like this happening in general, just to know how we can support other birthing people who are in these situations. You know, like it's not the 1920s anymore, right? So it's not, I'm going to walk into my gynecologist and she's going to be like, hey, do you want a hysterectomy? But that's because like I'm middle class, you know, and I'm not in prison and I'm not in a nice detention center. But that doesn't mean that this is still not happening. I think we need to like nuance and think about these a little bit more intersectionally, because these are the folks who are being targeted for these kinds of things. Like even if we talk about like the mentally disabled population, like there's certain folks or like, yeah, there's certain folks who are more likely to be incarcerated and thus more likely to be at risk for this kinds of coercive sterilization, you know? So like thinking about it from that perspective. Yeah. And then, yeah, just check eugenicsy and paternalistic ideas that exist within us, even if you don't think they do. Like, have you ever said like, oh man, she already has 5 kids. She doesn't need to have another one. Like, have you said like an undocumented person shouldn't have a child, or somebody in prison shouldn't have a child, or someone who is making a certain amount of money a year shouldn't have a child? So start to check yourself. And we're going to get into the present day of these kinds of things now. But first,
as you were talking, it made me think about like my experiences. So I did have like a cyst on my ovary and I was like, I need to go check if I still have my uterus, because I didn't trust my gynecologist. She's a black woman, but that she had like very biased views of me being a teen mother. So, you know, I can't trust that woman. That's why I stopped going to her.
Yeah.
But it's like, how would I know unless I was trying to conceive again that I no longer have my uterus the last time she was in there?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. 2 points.
I mean, I know now because I'm still having my period, but like, imagine.
can we have a cool uterus check?
What?
But
uterus check.
But yeah, so like three things, like the Akua uterus check, but sometimes like your period just be disappearing.
Not for months.
Your uterus isn't there.
Yeah,
but like
I don't know what's
like. Yeah, to like put it in the perspective of like these women in the 70s, like sometimes shit is stressful and your period just be disappearing and like you don't have access to go to a doctor and be like, yo, why is this happening or whatever? Mm-hmm. Or by the time it's happened, you're like, how did this happen? Mm-hmm. Secondly, about your black women doctor, like what I said with the paternalism thing, like that doesn't, like, just because, like, it's not this eugenics, like, I don't want anybody with the bloodline Jeffy to ever reproduce ever again. Mm-hmm. It's just like, oh, because, like, when did you have Dave? When you were 17?
Mm-hmm.
Like, she could be coming at this from this perspective of, a teen mother, you know, she's not doing it the right way or whatever. Like, kind of this condescending kind of, oh, so I don't think that I personally, having the views that I have and the biased views that I have, don't personally think that she needs to reproduce again. And let me be like judge, jury and executioner when it comes to what you do with your body, which reminds me of the doctor. Either it's malpractice or this nigga has an issue. I mean, either way, he has an issue. But like the doctor at that ICE prison, like he's a person of Indian descent. Like, he's not white.
Yeah.
He's not a white man with a beard. I don't know what which racial category he fell into in that man's five categories.
He's the person with the copper skin. He's the man with the copper skin.
Yes.
Third in line. Third in line.
Yeah. But yeah, so, like, who knows what he's even, like, taking on or whatever, like, folks who are of immigrant descent in this country, which we all are, can adopt these views of white supremacists and things like that. Or it could be from that paternalistic perspective. We don't know. Third thing, I just think doctors don't give a fuck about us. But there just seems to be a very... there's like a hop to like sterilizing black women.
Like, no, okay, so... Oh. I have another anecdote that goes to that. One of my grad school colleagues was also having difficulties with her period recently.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't coming for months, and then was just very strange. So she went to go see this doctor who's literal, mind you, I'm 28, she's 27. The doctor's literal answer was like, we can take the uterus. We're like, wait a minute.
What's up with that?
Wait a minute.
What's up with that?
She has no children. has, you know, ample amount of time to have children. It, you know, she was like, you can take these medications for about 7 days. And if that doesn't stop, then, you know, if that doesn't, if that, I can't remember if like her period wasn't coming down, was coming down to have, I can't remember what was happening for her, but she was like, you could take these medications. And if it doesn't help, you know, we can perform a surgery. And then the doctor will decide whether you need a hysterectomy. So she was like, all right. You know, she was kind of weighing that option of like, okay, you know, I can have the surgery to take a look and see what's happening. And then I can decide on the hysterectomy. And the doctor was like, no, we'll take the uterus while we're in there. So like she'd be under and they'd make the decision of whether they were removing her uterus or not. And she could just wake up without one. That
is so scary.
And I was like, you need a second opinion, sis. This is not what we're doing. Because that woman literally hopped to taking your uterus the moment you walked in her office. Like she didn't think about it. She was just like, we could remove it though. And so, it's like, why y'all so quick? Why are you so interested in my uterus? Like, why you want it?
So,
you just snatching uteruses like a hobby or something?
So,
that's so bizarre. So
I don't know how like the medical billing industry works or anything like that. And don't tell me because I don't care. I know it's all fucked up. But another thing that I was reading when it came to the Indian health services and those doctors who are partnering with them was like not only like the hop to like let's sterilize because of this paternalistic thing, but also because of like a monetary benefit when it comes to them. So,
wow.
Yeah, maybe like doing your fucking job doesn't pay as much as just removing someone's whole entire uterus. Yeah, you know? I will fight every doctor. I swear to God, I've had so many bad. If you're a good doctor, sure, but like I've had so many fucked up experiences with doctors. I will fight every single last one of you. My sleeves are rolled up. So like I don't care.
My cousin is a gynecologist. She's an OBGYN.
She want to fight.
And I feel like, no. So I feel like she do want to fight. But I feel like I get the same vibe from her that I got from my prior gynecologist, my prior OBGYN. And this like paternal, you don't need to have kids. I'm going to push you towards this decision kind of thing. And I remember like when I had Dave and I knew I was in a program with a lot of other teen moms, like the propensity to put you on birth control after you had that kid and also on like these long lasting birth control, they're not offering you the pill. They're like, hey, how about a IUD.
IUD.
How about an IUD that lasts for 10 years? How about that? Like, how about this bar on your arm? Like they're like pushing you towards these, longer ranging birth control options. And it's like, how do we go from the pill that almost every adolescent gets to like 10 years of birth control without much talk about the risks or the side effects, you know? Yeah, you know, so being pushed for the shot, like the Depo-Vera shot, which was at some point probably what was 11 years ago, maybe 12 years ago, was really harmful towards Black women, like just being pushed towards that. And I was like, I'm not taking that. You're not shooting me up with anything, you know?
Right.
But
right.
Yeah, you know, or this arm implantation, which I feel like we were being guinea pigs for because there was not much research. It was so new to the market, but you're pushing it in these populations.
And then another unfortunate side effect of all this bullshit that they have done is like, now we don't trust y'all. Like, you just like, I'm not putting that shit in my arm.
Yeah.
And then like we see that today with like folks talking about the coronavirus pandemic
vaccine
that will come eventually, and being like, you know, we have this sordid ass history with the medical system. I don't want to take that shit. But then also because of the same fucking medical racism, we are the people who are dying more of this shit. So it's just like a never ending loophole of I'm ready to fight Akua's cousin, basically, and white supremacy all in the same. But yeah. Is the conversation in this episode so far resonating with you? Is it helping you learn some new shit? Is it helping you unlearn some old shit? Or is it just allowing you to have a good ass time? Wow. Oh my God, you're applauding? Oh wow. Oh my gosh. Thank you so much. We love to hear your joy and affirmations about the show. We would also love for you to support the continuation of conversations like these. If you're listening to us on a podcast app, whip out your phone or your laptop or wherever you're listening to us on that podcast app. Open that app and take a moment to subscribe to us. Or if you can on that specific app, drop 5 stars and leave a rating and review for the homies, man. If you got a little extra change, you can drop some cash in the PayPal. You can do that by going to paypal.me/innerho. Or you can come join our Patreon community and access our chat and virtual events for as low as $2 a month by going to patreon.com/innerhouseuprising. Or you can just hit up your friend and say, yo, listen to this podcast. You know, we love and thank you all for your continued support. Is there something interfering with your happiness or preventing you from achieving your goals? Is it perhaps systemic oppression of your people globally? Yeah, be like that for me too. It'd be like that for me too. Yet I am so thankful that I get to process that with my fellow oppressed minority therapists over at my favorite teletherapy service, BetterHelp. BetterHelp will assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist, and you can start communicating in under 48 hours. It is not a crisis line. It is not self-help. It is professional counseling done securely online. There is a broad range of expertise available, which may not be locally available in many areas. The service is available for clients worldwide, and you can log into your account at any time and send a message to your counselor. You'll get timely and thoughtful responses, plus you can schedule weekly video or phone sessions so you won't ever have to sit in an uncomfortable waiting room as with traditional therapy. BetterHelp is committed to facilitating great therapeutic matches, so they make it easy and free to change counselors if needed. It's more affordable than traditional offline counseling, and financial aid is available. BetterHelp, along with we at the Innerho Uprising, want you to start living a happier life today, like at this very moment. You can visit their website and read their testimonials that are posted daily. You can also visit betterhelp.com/IHU, that's Better H-E-L-P, and join the over 1 million people who have taken charge of their mental health with the help of an experienced professional. In fact, so many people have been using BetterHelp that they are recruiting additional counselors in all 50 states. The service is just that good. And we have a special offer for Innerho Uprising that is you at this moment. You can get 10% off your first month at betterhelp.com/IHU. One more time, that is betterhelp.com/IHU. All right, we're getting back into the show. And as I just talked about, we have a long ass sordid history with eugenics, forced sterilization, all that bad stuff. So that was a very overt way of limiting marginalized people's access to healthy births and healthy birthing outcomes. Now we're going to talk about a more modern, covert byproduct of racism that also limits marginalized people's access to healthy births. And that is environmental racism and the negative birth outcomes that come along with them. Let's talk about it.
All right, so we're going to be doing a deep dive into environmental racism, starting with our good old friend, climate change. Now, climate change has been linked to food insecurity and undernutrition, water scarcity, poor hygiene conditions, infectious disease outbreaks, and increased vulnerability to floods, hurricanes, heat waves, and other natural disasters. All of which have a direct consequence for health during pregnancy, labor, delivery, and postpartum. I've decided to kind of break down some of these climate change effects and talk about how they are actually affecting pregnancy, reproduction, labor, delivery, and postpartum. So starting one with air pollution, and we talked about this in episode 24, don't gotta go to college to get more knowledge. I think that was it.
Sounds about right.
In which I did a current event on a systemic review of research in the U.S. that was done between 2009 and 2017 that evaluated the association between air pollution and heat or increasing temperatures on adverse birth outcomes, including preterm birth, low birth weight, and stillbirth in over 32 million births. If you don't remember, I'm going to remind you again that that study, that review, found that a bulk of the studies, over 84%, showed that women, their term, not mine, but birthing people, who were exposed to air pollution and higher temperatures during pregnancy had higher instances of premature birth, babies with low birth weight, and or delivering stillborn. Then we go to wildfires, because guess what? Climate change is a part of the reason of why we're having these wildfires. Mm-hmm. And in regards to wildfires, the CDC notes that smoke exposure increases respiratory and cardiovascular hospitalizations, ER visits, increased rates of asthma, bronchitis, chest pains, COPD, and other respiratory infections. It's also been associated with hundreds of thousands of deaths annually. With that being said, there was a 2018 study by the University of Washington and the Nature Conservancy, which used census data to develop a vulnerability index to assess wildfire risks in the communities across the U.S. And their results showed basically what we know, that there are racial and ethnic minorities who face greater vulnerability to wildfires as compared to their primarily white communities. Mm-hmm. Communities that were mostly Black, Hispanic, or Latino, or Native American experienced over 50% greater vulnerability to wildfires compared to other communities. There was also a study in October of 2019 which researched the impact of wildfire smoke on adverse pregnancy outcomes in Colorado from 2007 to 2015 that found that wildfire smoke exposure in the second trimester was positively associated with preterm birth. Meaning that as you went up in the second trimester, so did the risk of preterm birth. There was a negative association between first trimester exposure and birth weight, meaning that the more you were exposed to wildfire smoke in first trimester, the lower the birth rate was when your baby was born. And that there were other detrimental effects of wildfire smoke on the gestating person. I don't want to use the word mother, on the gestating person, including gestational diabetes and hypertension.
Wow.
And I noted these two studies because with a lot of this, there's an inference that has to be made. There are no direct studies on the impact of racism on any of this. So we have to then infer between the two from the study of the University of Washington that says Black and brown people are at a greater vulnerability. And the study that says this is what's happening to pregnancy for those exposed to wildfire smoke. I then want to talk about temperature, increase in heat, because that's what most people think of when we think about climate change. We're like, oh, it's getting warmer. And a review of research found that extreme heat caused by climate change affects fetal growth. And exposure to hotter than usual weather in early pregnancy may affect other aspects of fetal development, with recent studies even reporting an association between maternal heat exposure during the first few weeks of pregnancy, when the fetal heart development begins, and then congenital heart defects at birth of the baby. Extreme heat has also been shown to again shorten the pregnancy, leading to preterm birth and low birth weight. And a Texas investigation found that associations between stillbirth and high summer temperatures appear to be limited only to Hispanic and non-Hispanic Black women, with no association being seen for non-Hispanic white women.
Wow.
Climate change also affects precipitation, meaning rain, heavy rainfall, flooding, and hurricanes. And with flooding specifically, well, I'll be talking about flooding and hurricanes. Studies of women with prenatal flood exposure has indicated an association with high levels of prenatal stress and poor pregnancy outcomes, again, such as preterm birth, lower birth rate, and negative health outcomes in children, including later behavioral problems and psychiatric disorders. There's been focus on mold, as that is a consequence, a byproduct of flooding, especially for those who cannot afford to then have mold cleaned. There isn't a lot of, though we know that mold growth is a serious consequence of flooding, there has not been any studies on the reproductive effects among humans that are exposed to flooding or mold. But we know that what's seen in animals, which again leads to low birth rate, miscarriage, stillborn, and weakened immune system, we know that that is a possibility for
similar reproductive deficiencies in us humans, though there has not been any studies shown. Mm-hmm. And then hurricanes, which are a big creator of floods here in the U.S. Mm-hmm. There was a cohort study conducted among women who became pregnant within 6 months of Hurricane Katrina that showed severe hurricane exposure and was significantly associated with worse birth outcomes, including, again, low birth rate, as well as increased risk for developmental and neurological deficiencies in the children, as well as prenatal development distress caused by exposure to natural disaster, has been shown to have an impact on educational performance all the way into elementary school. In North Carolina, love how it keeps coming up, prenatal exposure to hurricanes and or flooding was associated with lower scores in standardized testing in math and reading by the third grade, with the probability of special education placement rising between 10 to 20% in that population.
Almost as if education performance has to do with racism and not race. Wow. Very interesting. I have some kind of like closing ties that I think can be inferred, but that we should say outright. First being, you know, when you were talking about, I think it was the temperature extreme study. No. It was the wildfire study that you had to take two studies and infer. I want to say, like, it's environmentally racist that those specific studies analyzing both don't exist in the first place. And then secondly, just because there's no outward numbers, I want to say that flooding and hurricanes disproportionately affect marginalized people like Black people, Latinx people, Native communities who live on coastal, who live in coastal cities, and who, like you said, don't have access to things like mold cleaning or the ability to go somewhere else when environmental disaster occurs and things like that.
Yes.
And I definitely focused on that cohort study following Hurricane Katrina because we know that Hurricane Katrina specifically was disproportionately affected Black people and Brown people in Louisiana at that time.
Yeah.
So one thing that I want to say irritated me. One thing that irritated me.
If it's valid, it's valid.
What I wanted to do was find out what it was a question Sam posed of what Black reproductive justice activists are demanding or requiring to address this impact of environmental racism on our populations. And what irritated me was that I could not find much on what their actions are and what their demands are, but that I also know that a lot of their work goes unacknowledged, unhighlighted, and underdocumented due to the same racism. When I was trying to find something, it really seemed like America doesn't think that we can chew gum and walk at the same time. It's either it's environmental racism or it's reproductive justice. It's like not the two. And when I was trying to find that intersection, it was very hard to find because when I'm looking for Black women and reproductive justice, we're only talking about abortion and the possible overturn of Roe versus Wade. And I'm like, you know, clearly, as I've pointed out, this is climate change. Environmental racism is a reproductive rights issue as well.
Yeah.
So if you know, this is a call out to y'all, if you guys know any Black reproductive justice activists who are doing the damn thing, that are doing the work, please tap us in, send them their names, links, whatever we can do so we can learn more about their work and also highlight them because their work is so needed.
Yeah.
And I can't find them on Google.
Yeah. Please let us know. I would love to just like uplift the work that they're doing all the time, honestly.
So,
thank you for that, Akua, and for doing the work of inferring and shit like that. And like, you were like the beginnings of the study work happening. You're like, okay, we have this and we have this. Yeah. So now we can take this information and begin to analyze and do numbers and whatever y'all academic ass niggas do. I don't really know. What y'all be doing good shit. So now, you know, we've talked about the past and present of what limiting access to healthy births amongst marginalized people looks like. Let's get into the future. You know, we do be some futuristic ass motherfuckers up in here. And this myth that is gaining traction that says due to climate change and eventual quote unquote global scarcity, we need to curtail the amount of humans being born. Let's talk about this overpopulation myth.
Yes. And something that admittedly I did not know was a myth until a couple of days ago. I was very much of the same mind of a lot of people, specifically like there are communities that like, you know how there's like mom groups and there's like, you know, I'm pregnant or any, all those groups. There's also a very aggressive child-free community and on different platforms, Facebook, Reddit. But one of their biggest pillars is straight up like, I'm doing the right thing for the planet because I'm not having a child. It happens a lot. Yes. So I was very interested in like knowing that this was a myth and like what the implications of this have on people and especially marginalized groups. Mm-hmm. So Michael Moore, we know who Michael Moore is, Bowling for Columbine. I think everyone just goes straight Bowling for Columbine when they think of him, but that's how I found out about him. But I remember having to watch that in like high school and I was really impressed and I thought he was like a smart person, and ever since then everyone's just like, this guy's a sham. So continuing on that train, his documentary train, he has released something called Planet of the Humans on YouTube. It says Michael Moore presents, but his name is everywhere on it. He's not necessarily the person who created it, but he definitely at least executive produced it. It currently has 7 million views. And they basically attempt to debunk popular energy alternatives like solar and wind energy. But they use old clips and outdated information and poke holes in the environmentalist movement as a whole, labeling them as capitalist schemes and focusing on overpopulation basically being the main issue, but not ever really talking about overconsumption. But this is intrinsically problematic because people usually hear like words, or, like trigger words, and they they lift things from sentences and don't necessarily hear the whole picture. So people watching this documentary will likely hear things like big business is bad, which, you know, there's some things about that. And other times you're like, okay, energy alternatives are bad and don't have children. That's kind of the key takeaways. It actually opens up with like the globe. And just basically like, look at all these lights. There's too many people here. And it just kind of keeps hammering that over your head.
What if we just turn them off?
Yeah, just straight up. Just turn them off and then we'd be fine, right? But to be fair, kind of, if we stopped using energy as much as we did, even if we had the same amount of people, we would be in a better situation.
Yeah.
But they don't mention that. They just talk about the people. And I actually said that when in actuality, if we stopped having kids at the same rate, but continue to overconsume in general, we'd still be destroying our planet. The documentary doesn't quote any studies and it screams just like never, not once.
You're telling me one episode of Inner Hoa Uprising, we've quoted like four or five, six studies and this nigga Michael Moore can't quote one? I'm ready to fight once again.
They have a couple of pie charts scattered in there, but that's about it. You know, everyone loves a good pie chart.
I love me a good pie chart, I guess.
Yeah,
a good one, though.
Where'd it come from? They didn't even talk about
where
that.
Where did it come
straight
from?
Up on the screen. And it's like, there's no scientists that were interviewed at all. It's a very narrow scope. It's like white men talking to white men about white
with
men.
With beards.
About white men.
With
things.
Beards.
Oh, with beards. Actually, now that I think about it, there were two races on there. Two different types of men. There were men with beard and men without beard. So I take it back. White men with beards. But it does talk about overpopulation. So basically, if you've never heard the word overpopulation, human overpopulation or population overshoot is a state in which there are too many people for the environment to sustain, with food, drinkable water, breathable air, basically our finite resources. And in more scientific terms, there's overshoot when the ecological footprint of human population in a geographical area exceeds that place's carrying capacity, damaging the environment faster than it can be repaired by nature, potentially leading to an ecological and societal collapse. Overpopulation could apply to the population of a specific region or to the world population as a whole. But they never mention, they just talk about it and they say there's too many people, but they never mention consumption, that overconsumption is really concentrated in North America, like Canada and United States, with white majorities and less population per area. So it's actually like the exact opposite. And it shifts the focus mentally. If you don't say this, the focus kind of becomes like black and brown people that dominated countries like India or like China, which has the world's biggest population, where populations are ginormous, but overconsumption isn't in even comparable to America or North America, Canada included. And by not outwardly saying that, you're not also debunking the assumption that will be made, because when you say overpopulation, you think of population. And they're just stoking the flames of these racist assumptions about energy consumption. Yeah. What did you say? I'm sorry.
It's a dog whistle. Yeah, it's a dog whistle.
Yeah. And they never mention the correlation between income, race, and consumption. It just never happens. But this has had 7 million views. And there are people who are going to leave this film or like leave this YouTube video and go, well, you know, anybody who has a certain amount of children or has children in general and chooses to have children are the bad guys. So another medium that talked about people being afraid of having children was the podcast For and From the Future. They talk about that there's three main fears that people often associate with not wanting to have a child. And the one that they really focus on in this episode was the fear of what it will do to the environment, which is very in line with the overpopulation myth.
Mm-hmm.
They also mentioned that not having a child is often cited as a way to help slow climate change, along with using an electric car and like going vegan. It's kind of in this vague list form that as if having a child is not this huge thing. It's just like, oh, I just won't have a kid. I'll have a car and I'll not eat meat. And this they actually said that the correlation came between personal sacrifice and the environmental impact. They mentioned that one of the first times that they started to make a correlation, or like people started to make a correlation with their own sacrifice and how well it helps the environment, is this BP ad in 2005,
mm-hmm.
About your personal carbon footprint and the guilt and personal responsibility people began to associate with it. I think I remember that vaguely, like seeing it, and it was just like a counter and all the things that people were doing. And you kind of felt like every time you did something, you were like making this huge impact.
I remember that, yeah.
Kind of sacrificing for the first time, really. Yeah. But BP is a fossil fuel company. Exactly. And they're putting the blame on the consumer. Exactly. Yeah. It's just like, you don't, most of the time we don't
fucking
even
egregious.
Think about it.
Fucking
yeah.
egregious.
And it's these huge ads, and it's like they're putting it on themselves, on us, but there's never been a time that they're taking responsibility for themselves. And the blame and the responsibility obviously should be less on us and more on the companies that are promoting this shit,
mm-hmm.
and are the big problem in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
Also, telling people that they shouldn't have children also implies that there's a set number of people on Earth that can be maintained at once, as if there's a science to this when there isn't. Because there is no foolproof of way of saying, like, there's at 10 billion people.
We cap out.
Capped,
yeah, exactly.
We're done.
It's clipped.
At
yeah.
10, yo, once
we don't
get
got no
99999,
we don't got no more
if
room.
If you push that baby out, we done, son. That's it. No room. And there is nothing like that. There's no science. And that's why when you ask one person, they'll say 5 billion people, which we're already past.
Mm-hmm.
Or they'll say like 20 and we're good. Yeah. And there's so many different fluctuating patterns in that's going on now. Like, we actually are falling below the replenishment line at this point, where it's like, we're not having children fast enough to replace the people that are
shit.
We're just as a population right now, we're straight up like, we're losing people at like right now.
Not my niggas. So, oh no.
Yeah. Yo, it's like at this point, they don't even mention that. They're just like, the only solution can be not having any more niggas. But it's just a wild card in terms of what you would need, because, you can see that consumption in general has boomed in the last couple of centuries or so. But there's been people here, you know what I mean? So it's just like, there's technology will change, patterns will change. There'll be different ways that we consume things. And all of those things play into what we should be doing in terms of giving birth or whether or not we should have children. But it's basically fundamentally trying to make this very unscientific question, which is straight up just like an ethical or moral choice, or personal choice, or just what you want to do, and trying to make it like super scientific when there's nothing basing that. Hmm. And it sounds good.
Pseudoscience, you say?
It's pseudoscience, yes. And that's there's a word for that. Yes, it's pseudoscience. And that's what we've been talking about. It's just straight up like, if to someone who doesn't look far enough or look past the initial like screaming words, you can easily think to yourself, if we don't have enough resources, if there's a finite amount of resources, then we should just stop having people to consume these resources. Meanwhile, we're never talking about the fact that literally this small faction of people are what are, or companies even, are what are consuming all of the resources, while me, the everyman and my one child, isn't really doing much. But you're going to make me feel guilty, or like, even this actually made me think as a callback when you're like, oh, people have five children. You're going to make me feel guilty for that sixth child when all of us are eating. We're good.
Yeah.
But you're like, you're the reason why the earth is the way that it is. But I'm flying this jet back and forth across the country without ever thinking.
Right? This fucking private jet. Like, are you kidding
me? But in the same vein that... we're looking at a very white lens when I'm trying to look at how this specifically affects like people of color, queer communities, or disabled communities. It's all very not present in terms of studies, and there's nothing really there. And I started typing in like trigger words to get the research going, not trigger words, like buzzwords to get the research going. And I typed in queer overpopulation, and here Darwin comes back up again. There, so in talking about or searching for the quote-unquote gay gene, they talked about, or there's been a couple of different publications that have talked about, is the quote-unquote gay gene nature's answer to overpopulation? That is what I've seen a couple of times, and I wish it wasn't, it was only one page, but it's several pages where it's like, oh, this has happened as an answer to overpopulation, even though I didn't know that being gay meant that you couldn't reproduce. And that was something that thankfully I did see where it was just like, if nature really wanted that, then nature would have made them, or anyone who is, and that's, but it's just the fact that it needs to be said, the fact that it needs to be rebutted, or the fact it's, and it's in a couple of things. So it's just weird. And it's very like, what?
And all of it is so, can I hop in for a second?
Yeah.
Nature doesn't want anything. Random mutations happen. And mutations that fit the environment that we're living in are selected for, and those people go on to reproduce.
Yeah.
Like, nature wasn't like, let me, like, your genes don't create something to help you in the environment. It's just like, it fucking happens randomly, and then you're just like more fit for the environment, so you keep reproducing. Yeah. Like, people's DNA wasn't like, let's make these niggas gay so more people die off. Like, what's the fuck?
How did nature know? Who sent the memo to nature that was like, yo, it's too many of these niggas. Please help.
Yo, and it's like these jokes that we always make where it's like, oh, like I'll see memes where it's like, we are the virus. Or it's like, nature's fighting back, or nature will always win. Like, we put so much emphasis on
nature does not
on,
have
like,
a personality, bro.
There's no sentience in the entirety of nature. But it's really like we're fighting against it. It's like, ah, man, like it's putting this one gene in us so that, no.
Also, there's so few things that, so like, I forget what it's called. Monogenetic versus polygenetic. Shout out to In Those Genes for teaching me all this shit. There's so few things that are caused by one gene. And gayness is not one of them, you motherfuckers. Yep. Sickle cell disease is one of them, for example. Or like, I think Huntington's disease is one of them. But it's not being fucking gay. There's mad factors, both environmental and genetic, that cause you to be gay. The gay gene. Oh my God. What is it called? Gosh. What is it called? What is it? When did they find it?
They actually have been just stopping at quoting it the gay gene. They didn't even try and give it like a nice, you know, how
what's
they
the bisexual like a, gene? I'm curious.
Because I want to know, because does the gay gene eat the straight gene? Because it stopped halfway with me. It stopped. I don't know. How does it work?
Oh, I hate pseudoscience.
And people believe in it. And it's scary because, It's fun. Like, it's not fun to joke about it. Like, we can laugh about it sometimes, but sometimes when you think about, like, this is someone's whole, this is as far as someone's going to educate themselves, because mm-hmm. they just have confirmation bias. As soon as they see something that affirms what they were already kind of assuming, they run with it. And I'm thinking about the 7 million people who watch this documentary, who now think that wind energy and solar energy are worse than... then I don't know, BP, they leave this and they spread this to someone who doesn't see it. And it's like, you know, misinformation is the virus.
If you want to talk about it. And say it's just, that.
It's scary. And it's just like, I can't say, I didn't do lateral reading before this. I didn't go around and tell anybody that, oh, having too many kids. But like, I'm seeing a whole bunch of people say, and I'm like, oh, well, this must be true. Mm. And here I am going, this is the most wrong I've ever been. And you gotta admit that. But it's just like, it requires you to read some more, or to like be open to these other ideas, because, you know, I could have read this and be like, well, that doesn't make any sense. I see people and I think, well, there's gotta be less of us. And I could keep going like that. And it's just scary how people use their platform for just nonsense, evil. You know? Yeah.
Nonsense.
Why do you have evil. A documentary with not one scientific evidence, source, survey, scientist, person?
So irresponsible. When we were producing this, I told you that it was taken off of YouTube.
It's there.
Why is it on YouTube?
I don't
what
know.
What the fuck? These people,
I don't know.
These social media platforms who are trying to do this like last minute thing, like, oh, let's stop misinformation. Now, after four years, we're going to say that Trump is lying when he's been lying for the past 4 years. Why the fuck is that documentary on YouTube, son? What is your problem? These niggas are ruining the world. I'm rolling up my sleeves again. We're going to fight.
Go fight.
Oh, nah, man, boy. I gotta fight Michael Moore in my street, yo.
Yo, straight square up. The fuck
square up. Like, yo, bro. Come on, son.
It's on site.
Getting a couple of
on site.
Straight up.
No words. I gotta do it. I'm dropping my purse, earrings, or I'm like, nope. I just see that nigga over there.
So what's up? That's it.
People won't even know why we're fighting.
No, we don't condone violence. This is a joke.
I was
just
going to say, as a way to respond to any type of objection, this is a joke.
Yes, this is a joke.
I had to make sure to say that.
These motherfuckers said they was going to fight Michael.
Nah, it's, and we don't realize, as sometimes as New Yorkers, we say things, and I swear it's a turn of phrase, y'all.
Yeah.
I mean, oh, but don't pass me, Michael. I'm not.
Fuck to you in the street, nigga.
I'm not going to finish the sentence, but... I don't like you, bro. Like, okay, nah, I'm
taking it. I have mad things to say about what you said, but first, Akua, you got anything to say?
No, go ahead.
Okay. All right, so I do want to talk a little bit more about, and this is not sex, love, and dating, but I'm just angry as a human being. So a little bit more about this care for the environment thing that you were talking about, and how Rose and her guests talked about it on Advice Foreign from the Future, like this. As long as I stop eating meat and as long as I drive an electric car, I'm going to like rule the world or whatever. Or not rule the world. I'm going to save the world. I just hate that. I hate that so much. And I want to talk about it a little more. So Elon Musk, who I do not dig as a person at this point, and he makes him less and less every single day, but like just a lot of people being so impressed by his work with Tesla and his work with the electric car, not considering the context that, like, not saying like electric cars are better or worse than gas cars, but like the battery to produce an electric car puts out just as much emissions as like something like 10 years of driving a gas car. Like, what the fuck is that? And then like just like this, like we have things that we can do to actually provide better outcomes for the environment, but we don't do them because we're still like, fuck yeah, capitalism. Like, cars is a very fuck yeah capitalism kind of thing. Like, let's make as much money as we can in the space that people need. Like, niggas do need to transport, but like there's no reason why we haven't invested in fucking trains in this country. Like, there's no reason why the goddamn E-train, yes, I'm calling you out, you motherfucker, you made me late to work so many times, is using like the same switches from like a fucking 100 years ago.
Yeah,
that makes no sense. There's no, honestly, like, I should not have to have a car. I should not have to have a car. New York City has been around long enough and it has evolved enough that transit should, it shouldn't take me that long to get to Brooklyn, son. It just shouldn't. Nope. It's right there. It is right there.
Right there.
This makes no sense. Like, these little band-aids that we put on are not really band-aids. They're not really trying to address the problem. It's just this fucking capitalistic bullshit. And it gets on my nerves that people buy into this shit and think like, oh, it's for the good cause. But this nigga Elon Musk is not for the good cause. Like, he is not for the betterment of humanity, or at least in the ways that I think that humanity actually needs to be bettered. And yeah, like the fucking, the vegan shit is also, it's also problematic. It's also problematic. Not being vegan, but like thinking that just because you're vegan, you're saving the world kind of thing.
That's very in line to, and it parallels like Michael Moore talking about, oh, this, and then you'll save the world this way. Mm-hmm. What the health did that to people with veganism?
I never watched that.
And there was another thing, the Cowspiracy. Cowspiracy and What the Health. That is when vegans went from like, okay, I love animals and I really like just fuck with them and their lives.
Which is valid.
Has always been like, yeah, because when I sit and think about it for a long time, I'm like, holy shit, you know, that's fine. But Cowspiracy specifically talks about how like the methane from cow poo produces more greenhouse gases or whatever than cars, period. Like it's, and it's like only because we're eating meat. So that was like when vegans were like, all right, I'm saving the world. And then What the Health was like, every single disease that humanity has ever had has can be absolved by eating vegetables or and only vegetables, being vegan. So that's where it comes from. Like, it, What the Health was like the biggest battery in people's back, where it was just like, if you're not vegan, then you're just like, you don't care about humans, you don't care about the earth. And that's where it comes from. Like, another documentary that's just saying things that people want to hear and kind of blaming businesses and blaming this bottom line, which fuck businesses at the end of the day, like big businesses that don't give a fuck about us. But at the same time, it's just like,
what about the other like, businesses that are trying to say that they're the solution to these things?
Exactly. Exactly. So you tend to push, and that's the thing. It's an all or nothing mentality with all of these documentaries. And like ASAP Science made a good point about the Michael Moore thing, where they were like, every single time he started saying something that felt legitimate, they actually mentioned the electric car problem. We're just like, yeah, that is something that we should address. Electric cars, while it's a good idea, we're not there yet. But it just goes straight up like, all things and this whole idea sucks. This sucks. So people just hear all or nothing and they're like, I can only associate it with something negative, as opposed to saying like, there are actual environmentalists who are like, see these problems, they're aware of it, and they're trying to fix them. But now it's just like, nah, they don't see the bigger picture. This is it. And I'm it's a gotcha moment where it's like, ha, you didn't know this. And it's like, no, like, we knew that, bro. Like, all the things you're saying, we knew. And like, talk about the fact that we know it and we're trying to fix it. Nah, it's just like constantly feeling like you're pulling the wool over people's eyes, which is just fucking everything up.
Yeah, it's kind of like, it's very individualistic band-aids to problems that we literally all need to come together to solve, and like break down systems to solve. And it also is a bit paternalistic, like, let me tell you what you can do with your life to save the world, as opposed to you telling the fucking big guys what to do to save the world. You had mentioned like people are going to, like, the dog whistle is going to go directly to India, which it is. It's going to go to China, which it is. It's also just going to go to places like where you see very like urban spaces, but in quote unquote underdeveloped countries, because they don't have the infrastructure to, like, they don't have the infrastructure yet to accommodate that many people. So like, if you see like Lagos in Nigeria, for example, you're going to think like, oh, there's way too many niggas in Nigeria. Even though like the rest of the country is like rural and people are like spread out in the same way that it is here, but they just don't have the same infrastructure as we do here. And then even to take it like from outside of like the global population, people are also going to draw up like racial tropes here. Like, oh, a whole bunch of undocumented people living in one apartment. Like, oh, they have way too many kids or whatever, even though they're all living in one apartment because they don't have access to housing, affordable housing. Or like the welfare queen myth of, oh, this black woman is having so many kids or whatever, she's sucking the system dry. I can't pull this up right now at this very moment. I could, but I'm just gonna say a grain of salt if this is not, like, do your due diligence when I say this, but I have read in some spaces that the, like how you said, we're dropping off as a population. I've heard that I didn't hear that the drop off was going to happen now. So that's interesting. But I've heard that we're going to get to a certain point. Like, I think it is 8 or 9 million and then drop off because of just like the trend of the way that the world works. So like people had many kids back in the day because sometimes it was like, is my kid going to live? Let me just have 9 of these motherfuckers just to be sure. But as you have access to more like healthy foods, better housing and things like that, you just tend to have less kids. Also, as you have access to, God, why is that heater so loud? Just ignore that because I feel like talking right now. But as you have access to greater like career options or like different career options, you're also going to choose to have less kids because you're going to spend more time working or spend more time in education or something like that. So it's interesting that he didn't even put that in the documentary. Because I think many people have hypothesized that in the first place.
Of course he didn't put it
in the documentary.
Yeah,
he didn't fucking care.
Because it's to support his idea.
Yeah, he didn't care. Oh, yeah. I forgot you said there was one pie chart.
It was one pie chart. There was no science. There was he knew what he was doing for sure.
Yeah.
He used like one clip from 2005 where like this festival was being powered by solar energy and like everything shut off because I think a cloud or it started raining or something. Mm-hmm. I'm like, we all know solar energy has like advanced way past that point. But there's no like update. Indication whatsoever. Update, but also no indication that that clip was even that old.
Oh,
it was almost as if it was implied that that was happening yesterday or like last year or the year before that. It was never like, this clip is old. It was just like, we're going to play this. And you had to kind of look at it and be like, oh, well, this person, so that's what they were mentioning in ASAP Science. They're like, I wouldn't have noticed if like this person wasn't wearing very 2005 clothes. Then I was like, wait, no one dresses like that anymore. And that's what made them realize like, wait, no, this is really old, as opposed to clearly saying it. It's meant to mislead you. It's meant to make you feel like panicky and very much wanting to shift the blame. They kept showing images of like solar farms just kind of decrepit and broken down. So it's just like, oh, look, they're just building these farms and they're not taking care of them. But it's like, what? Like, it's very meant to scare you, leave the film fearful. And the only thing that you can control is I'm not going to have any kids and I'm going to condemn anybody who does.
That is shameful.
Yeah.
That is freaking shameful. So you telling me these guys were in fedoras over there? They were wearing G-Unit.
I was just about to say they're wearing G-Unit wife beaters, yo. They're just standing there. That's how I knew. It's straight. Like, you knew. Like, wait a minute.
How you knew?
Is that 50 Cent back there? Are they bumping?
The blazer over a white beater.
That's fucking funny. Oh man, but Michael Moore, still shame on you.
Yeah.
Last thing that I want to throw out in regards to this like overconsumption thing. Mm-hmm. This is an actual factual that I just checked, though it was touted in 2012. Like, that's when this fact was introduced, but we haven't gone up significantly in population, so yeah. But the world's farmers produce enough food to feed 1.5 times the global population. So that's enough to feed 10 billion people, though we are at 7.6 billion people. And it just reminds me of like when coronavirus started and I guess like that hindered trade and there was just farmers like throwing out potatoes. Like niggas don't need potatoes somewhere else in the world. So yeah, I think we got enough stuff, man. We have enough stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Think about the new biz and in you saying the potatoes and throwing it out and just like going back to capitalism and it's like making money or whatever. Mm-hmm. Do you know how much food is thrown out? And now there's a business for it, of course. But how much food is thrown out just because it doesn't look like the food that you would recognize? Like, straight up edible, nutritious food. But because there's two stumps on it as opposed to one potato, they throw it out. And it's like, now there's a business for it because, of course, mm-hmm. so it's like misfit foods. Yeah. Oh, you can get them for cheaper. Yeah. You get them for cheaper because they're garbage, according to other people. Mm-hmm. But that's like, if you think about that and then you want to tell me also that there's too many people here and we don't have enough resources.
It's not true.
It doesn't make any sense. And it doesn't make any sense because it's not real.
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly. Well, thank you for I know you didn't watch the documentary, but thank you for enduring through that bullshit and kind of taking a dive on the deep-seated dark side of the internet. The Cajun thing is so funny to me.
No problem.
Yeah. Anybody else have anything to say before we wrap up this episode?
Nah, man. Just do your reading, y'all.
Yeah.
I'll say it every episode. Just don't take anything for face value, because I do it sometimes, but look, this show, my friends, they all force me to do better. So I'm telling y'all to do better.
Yeah.
That's it.
We are in a crisis, honestly. Like, it is, like, legitimately a crisis. So, like, call it what it is. And it's a complex crisis, and it's multi-layered, and there's no easy resolve, right? Like, there's no one fix. Like, there's been a lot of bullshit to get us here at this point, and it's going to be a lot of undoing to do, and the undoing is not going to look like... Like, if you see an infographic or something like that on Twitter or Instagram, it's just, like, 5 easy ways to save the planet. Like, that's not going to save the planet. Or like,
shit.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So just know that all of these things are complex, and they are going to take complex solutions. So you have to complicate your understanding of them, to be honest.
So, yes.
Yeah.
I was going to say, it didn't take simple measures to get here, and it's not going to take simple measures to get out of it.
Yeah, straight exactly. Up. Yeah.
Yeah.
Even the invention of race. Oh, my God.
So much time, so much effort.
So much convolution. Ugh. They were saying such silly things. So many white men saying such silly things. White men with beards. Anyway, okay, so if this episode made you laugh, helped you learn something, made you feel good, made you question yourself in a good way, or positively moved you in any sense, please leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher, and let everyone you know that you love these hoes. We appreciate all of you.
And if you would like to follow us on social media, you can do so at Inaho Uprising without the G on Twitter, Inaho Uprising on Instagram and Facebook. You can join our Facebook group by searching Inaho Uprising Community, which is CUMMUNITY, and you can head to innerhouseuprising.com to pay a hoe. If you'd like to follow me, my name is Rebecca, sometimes Rodecca. Oh, I'm sorry, never mind. My name is sometimes Rebecca, apparently, at The Darkest Timeline on Instagram and Existing Crisis on the Twitter.
You guys can follow me, Akua, at Hey Akua Girl on Instagram and Twitter.
You can follow me at SlamRid on Instagram and Twitter. Check Instagram for cosplays and really, really weird food. Shout out to Weird Food. All right, everybody,
shout out to Weird Food.
Have a great week.
Bye.
Bye.